Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of our fascinating discussion with Dr. Jay Lombard, who is one of the developers of the GenoMind test. And in part one, we talked a little bit about some of the genetic factors that the GenoMind test can pick up on. So, Jay, tell us precisely what does this test entail? What does a person do to get this test performed?
Well, the first part, and probably the hardest part, is convincing their doctor that it's going to be something that can help. And we certainly don't promote the product as a be-all or end-all. We believe that it's a tool for clinicians. It's not something that should be done in lieu of other important aspects of psychiatric practice, including, you know, a very comprehensive medical history and family history. But we do think it's a very valuable tool that people should ask their doctors about, because you can't get the test unless it's through a prescription by your physician. That's, you know, something that we are strongly feel strongly about, because we want to make sure that the information that's communicated is communicated in a way that is in a proper context for treatment, as opposed to not really understanding, you know, how to interpret these results properly.
Well, that's actually one of the criticisms of genetic testing, and in fact, the FDA has pulled the ticket of 23andMe, which is a genetic testing company, doing something entirely different. But what they tended to do is they sent consumers information saying, well, you're prone to this disease, you have a higher risk of cancer, you have a higher risk of osteoporosis, you have a higher risk of heart disease, and it was just direct consumer, and there wasn't any expert who could filter and interpret and properly counsel patients about this. So they said, look, you're just getting people all riled up for no reason, because these tests, they don't necessarily, it's not the crack of doom if you have, you know, a gene that's positive for one or another thing, and you really have to have a health professional put this in context for you. So I like the way that you're administering the test, is that expertly trained practitioners who you consult with. I will confess I spend hours talking to Dr. Lombard interpreting these tests when they come through, because it's an art, really, to understand the role that these genes play. It's not like, something that you can just read a quick protocol for. So
that's exactly right. And that's both the beauty and also the difficulty with this field in general, is that it really requires a strong steep curve, educational curve, both for patients and also for their providers, about the value of the test. That's, you know, part of our core message, is exactly what you just said.
So on the website, genomind.com, that's GENOMIND.com, there's a section that says preferred providers. Do you give people a heads up, say a person hears this and says, gee, I would like to have my physician learn about this test, but if you're there, if the physician's not amenable to that, can they go to a preferred provider who can administer and then interpret the test for them?
Yes. I mean, I think that there are enough people in across the country now that have heard of us that probably most psychiatrists in the country know about GenoMind. We've been, a live entity in the market for the last couple of years, so I'd say that most psychiatrists are familiar with it. Primary care doctors, to a lesser extent, hopefully, programs like this will be of help for increasing that awareness. And we certainly very much welcome the opportunity of one-on-one, really, literally, doctor by doctor, to take the time to help, you know, educate doctors so they feel comfortable having this tool at their disposal, so that they're not scared away by the technology and can really use it as a valuable tool. And the doctors who've taken that time to do that have really found it extremely helpful for their practices. The patients, you know, like it, the doctors like it, and it's just been a very, very valuable tool for people that are in the psychiatry world, if you will.
So what does it physically entail to perform the test? I mean, a patient gets a kit, it's a take-home kit, then what happens?
Right. So it's a very simple test to administer. You literally either take a swab, a cheek swab, through like it looks like a toothbrush, or you could just spit into the tube, depending on what you prefer. That's sent to our lab, and within less than a week, your physician gets a report. We make available free consultations with PharmDs or psychopharmacologists to explain to the doctor, you know, the meaning of the results, how to help the doctor interpret the results, and we do that for as long as that doctor feels they require to become an advocate for their patients in this regard.
How many genes are in your lineup that you test for?
We have a plan for expanding them. Right now we have two broad-based categories. One are called pharmacokinetic genes, which are related to primarily drug metabolism, so that if a person takes a certain drug in psychiatry, their rate of either breaking down the drug at a certain speed or not can be determined through genetics.
Parenthetically, I would say that really is the future of medicine for all doctors. I think every single patient who gets a pharmacy drug should get one of those tests because, you know, that's why some people can take certain things. They're just blown away by the tiniest dose. And conversely, there's some people who, you know, it's like the people who can drink you under the table. They can just metabolize drugs like no tomorrow. And they need an elephant tranquilizer practically to get an effect. And there's a genetic basis for this. And we actually predict this so that we don't knock patients out. I mean, this is even conceivably something that could have prevented a tragedy like Joan Rivers, because she may have gotten a standard dose of anesthesia, but who knows, maybe that was too much for her metabolism, and that could have been predicted.
Wow. It's really hard to bring up because everyone loved her so much, but you're exactly right. And, you know, some of the psychiatrists who use our tests believe that this will be standard of care within 3 to 5 years because of exactly the kinds of examples about people who develop very serious untoward side effects. I mean, a person could actually... who has a poor metabolism of a certain drug can actually have up to 10 times higher blood levels of that drug with the exact same dose that would be given to another individual. So I think you're spot on by saying this should be standard of care really for many, many medications. In fact, the FDA itself tells people that if you're taking certain medications that you should, you know, make dose adjustments based upon, you know, if a person's a poor metabolizer. Well, how would you know you're a poor metabolizer without getting that genetic testing? You know, so there are lots of medications that are out there that produce, you know, high risk of adverse effects in people who can't metabolize those drugs.
And these are so-called CYP genes. They're in the liver, and they're part of cytochrome P450. See, I'm going. I actually remember some of this stuff from med school. Pretty good.
You're pretty good.
Yeah, it's amazing. I can actually remember this. But this is like everyone is different, and some are fast metabolizers, some are slow metabolizers, and you can tell based on the testing.
That's right, and that's exactly what you said. They're called cytochrome P450s. These are enzymes that we all have in our liver that actually affect the rate of metabolism of most drugs. Certain drugs are metabolized by the kidneys, but a large percentage of drugs, particularly psychiatric drugs, are metabolized hepatically by the liver. And then the second portion of our test are the genes that we talked in the first part of the show, which are what are called pharmacodynamic genes, things that relate to serotonin neurotransmission, dopamine neurotransmission, other neurotransmitters, to understand, you know, how the body actually processes those particular chemicals that are already in your body. You know, so how does your brain react to dopamine, for instance, or how does your brain react to serotonin? That's also under genetic control to a certain extent, and that goes a long way to understanding these kinds of issues like temperament or, you know, risk for things like post-traumatic stress disorder.
And so for our listeners, you know, many of them are desirous of news they can use. And this test, you know, and also there's a bias among our listeners clearly against the use of medications. I mean, when necessary, but usually natural substances first. So I think what's unique about your perspective here is this is not just about drugs. It's also about potential benefits of various types of nutritional supplements, which, again, it's a shotgun approach. You know, we say, oh, you know, fish oil, that's good for the brain, so we give that. Or, you know, SAMe, that can sometimes be good for depression, and so on and so on. And so what are some of the considerations vis-a-vis nutrients that you can derive from this test?
Well, that's a great question, and I want to thank you for bringing that up, because I, as you mentioned, my bio, I've been a very, very strong advocate for, you know, an integrative approach to psychiatry and neurology, and you know, very much, you know, believe that both approaches are, you know, should be rationally based. And, you know, there are, you know, a fairly good list of well-studied nutraceuticals that have achieved you know, some of the benefit in ways that medications have been, you know, more studied by drug companies, obviously. But things like SAMe has, you know, very good antidepressant effects in certain individuals. And by understanding how SAMe exactly works can help us to identify who is more likely to respond to SAMe. And it's you know, it's not an inexpensive ingredient. People who go to the health food stores to buy SAMe kind of have sticker shock, especially when you realize the dose to achieve an antidepressant effect is it's much higher than the 200 milligram tablets that are in that bottle. So
exactly. And so it's an investment. I tell patients, look, it's pricey, but, you know, try it for 2 months, and, you know, if you get a benefit, great. You know, it's hit or miss.
Right. And that's you know, unfortunately, that's the truth for a lot of supplements. And we know from, you know, recent studies that with using methylfolate as a an antidepressant, that also may be under some genotypical as well as phenotypical type of variables. So the phenotypical variables are easy. We know that methylfolate is a better antidepressant in people who have comorbid metabolic syndrome. So if you have, you know, if you're overweight or you have metabolic syndrome, and you're using methylfolate, you're going to more likely get an antidepressant response than if you don't have those comorbid conditions. We also know that those gene variants that we mentioned also predict a higher rate of probability of getting an antidepressant response. Those who don't have those gene variants, it may be no better than taking placebo or taking just regular, you know, good old-fashioned inexpensive folic acid. So again, you know, the gene test has benefit to helping, you know, improve the specificity of using nutraceuticals, not just drugs for treating these conditions.
Now, some clinicians have noted, and this is taking it one step further than the usual level of sophistication, because methylfolate is very popular now. And in fact, it's even popular in the conventional medical world, because there are drugs like serifolin and Deplin, which are often prescribed practically willy-nilly to patients with who are taking antidepressants. So they just, the way they're advertised is that they are hamburger helper for drugs like Zoloft, Paxil, Prozac, etc. They just take them, you know, and it's going to help. But there's an issue of potential backlash for some people who take those, and it makes them worse. And your test can actually predict an adverse reaction to high doses of methylated B vitamins like that methylfolate and B12 and B6, correct?
Well, we're not exactly sure, although I will tell you that, you know, there is some theoretical grounds for concern in using high doses of methylfolate in different types of conditions, because folic acid, and the methylated version of folic acid, can many times suppress the expression of genes. So one of the genes that methylfolate can suppress is the COMT gene.
So if you're already low in that, you're going to be, it's going to make it worse, possibly.
That's right. And that may account for why people become overactivated, because we've heard a lot of people have developed side effects, including, you know, becoming, you know, activated by, you know, taking high dose of methylfolate.
Or alternatively, you know, sometimes parents of autistic children, they'll say, you know, the doctor gave my kid methylfolate, and instead of, you know, calming down, my kid started screaming and, you know, tearing at his clothes and, you know, biting and, you know, really off-the-wall behavior.
Yep.
So this can be a, you know, sometimes predicted or explained if you get the proper profile.
That's right. We think that that is, you know, well needed, not just in the pharmaceutical world, but I think the nutraceutical world needs to have a more intelligent way of deciding on which people would benefit, you know, for these supplements as well.
And fish oil, of course, plays an important role in natural, nutra-psychopharmacology, I guess I coined a term there. But there's actually some of the tests that can shed light on one's likelihood of responding well to or omega-3 fatty acids, correct?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think people don't really understand how fish oil may be beneficial for the brain and what exactly fish oil is doing in the brain. People talk about its anti-inflammatory effects, which are true, but we know that fish oil has particularly a beneficial effect on ion channels in the brain. And ion channels regulate the conduction or the activity of the brain in general. And fish oil may have a benefit, particularly on these ion channels, which can be disturbed in many, many psychiatric conditions.
So it stabilizes the brain in a way. It has anti-seizure effects, but also mood-stabilizing effects, it seems.
Yes, in fact, some of the strongest use of fish oil, actually, in psychiatry has been in bipolar depression.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for the manic phase of depression, but more for the depressive phase of the illness. And the mechanism is unknown still, but it's been speculated that probably the mechanism is that it's reducing neuronal excitability by, you know, curbing the activity of these ion channels.
So the genomine test can actually suggest, hey, this is a patient where you should really go full court press with fish oil, more likely than not to get a response.
Or at least give it a trial, right?
Yeah.
If people, you know,
I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but, you know, if you were to tell a patient, gee, you should really try a high dose fish oil, you know, 6 capsules a day for a couple of months, it's nice to have some guidepost as to the likelihood that that's going to be a good intervention, and that's one of the reasons I appreciate the test. Another nutrient that you frequently discuss in your analysis of test results is inositol, which is kind of a forgotten nutrient. It's in B complex, and I actually wrote a paper on the subject of inositol. I think it was back in, oh my goodness, it must have been 1995. I think that was the year I wrote that paper, and as kind of a little recognized treatment for bipolar disorder, then called manic depression, obsessive compulsive disorder in particular. There was some literature on that. And also anxiety. So are there certain markers, genetic markers, that suggest that inositol could play a helpful role?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I was talking just today to a very big alternative medicine practitioner, and I asked him, you know, point blank, what he felt was the most beneficial part of our test. And he said, you know, using inositol for particular gene variants that's in the genomine test. So it's funny that you actually brought that up. So there are subtypes of serotonin receptors in the brain, and these subtypes of receptors really have a significant effect on behavior, mood, appetite, and the like. The receptor is called the 5-HT2C receptor, a subtype of serotonin receptors, and inositol acts as a compound that binds to those receptors and may be the reason that it mediates some of its beneficial effects. So you're exactly right. Inositol is one of these forgotten things. There's some very good data with high doses of inositol, particularly in obsessive compulsive disorder.
You got to take literally teaspoons of it, you know, several times a day. Teaspoon,
yeah,
4 or 5 times a day.
Yeah, that probably the biggest rate-limiting step is the doses need to be so high for the compound. But this particular practitioner told me that they've seen really outstanding results using inositol in their practice based upon our test. You know, other things like magnesium are important for clinicians to consider. Magnesium also helps stabilize those channels that may be overly excited in the brain. And as you mentioned, fish oil.
Indeed. So an array of possibilities are opened up via the Genomine test. And so what lies in the future for Genomine? They going to bring in any other tests on stream, or is that top secret? I don't want to give away any trade secrets here.
Well, it's only semi-top secret. We understand that there's a big desire in the integrative medicine community for more genes relevant to that aspect of practice. As an example, N-acetylcysteine is another one of these natural products.
Yes.
That has very, very good data.
For compulsive gambling and obsessive-compulsive disorder, yeah.
Right, even in treatment-resistant schizophrenia in some
wow.
studies.
Yeah.
And it's very inexpensive and doesn't work in everybody. But we know the mechanism of action of how N-acetylcysteine works. It's important that, you know, we increase the awareness of the utility of that compound in particular people. Looking at things like glutathione metabolism, which is very relevant to conditions like autism and schizophrenia. I think it's a very forgotten area in conventional psychiatry, the role that those enzymatic processes play in psychiatric conditions. And there's a host of others as well. So we're excited about getting that, you know, off the ground as soon as possible. We're working hard behind the scenes to validate each of these genes and the language that is required to appropriately help the clinicians to interpret them. And it's not all top trade secrets. We certainly, if any doctors are on you know, and want to contact us directly, or even patients, so we, you know, really welcome people to explain, you know, what we're up to and how we hope to improve patients with psychiatric problems, because it's a huge unmet need. I mean, it really is a very, very big unmet need, which I think everyone recognizes that if we can help improve people's lives through, you know, better understanding of the brain and the biology of the brain in these conditions, we're really going to do a very, very big service for people who are suffering, you know, from these conditions.
Well, absolutely. And our Intelligent Medicine call to action today is check out the website genomind.com. It's amazing what worlds lie within a few drops of saliva. And you seem to have expended the brain power to figure out what knowledge lies therein, because it's a complex field that requires a lot of research. And you've actually pulled together a great team of researchers, not just one single individual, but some of the top researchers across the world who've come up with connections between genes and mental functioning. And we're just beginning. We're just scratching the surface. So this is a very exciting enterprise, medicine of the future, I think.
Thank you so much. I really, really very much appreciate that.
My pleasure. Well, that was Jay Lombard, Chief Scientific Officer and Medical Director of GenoMind. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.